Okay. All right, Earl, do you want to do like an intro?
Sure.
We're here with...
Are we ready?
Yeah.
Ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Welcome to the Sports Parent Podcast, where we talk about sports and parenting and the intersection between sports and parenting, hosted by best-selling author Jeff Perlman.
And Catherine Perlman, also known as the Family Coach. Our guest this week is A.J. Hawk, the former Ohio State linebacker who, after being selected by Green Bay with the fifth overall pick in the 2006 NFL Draft, spent 9 years in Green Bay, another in Cincinnati. He'll join us to talk about his three kids playing football. If you're just joining the podcast, here's a lowdown. Catherine and I have been married for 14 years. We have two kids. We live in SoCal. Can I say SoCal?
No.
We live in Southern California. After a recent move from New York, we call each other Earl, and we love Hall & Oates Guinea Pigs, the acting of Blythe Danner, and the numbers 23, 17, and 5.5.
Right, he totally made that up.
Before we get going, this show is sponsored by B2 Design. They take pride in planning, strategizing, and organizing your online content to make your message clear and concise. B2 Design works with clients of all sizes. The Family Coach used B2 Design to create her website and logo. You like it?
I love it.
And my website was also designed by B2 Design. You like it?
Love it.
For more information on building a beautiful new website or updating an old one, get in touch with Brant Beaupre at brant@b2design.net, and that's 2-T-W-O. Now, why don't we talk a little bit real quick about how we parent, because we haven't really talked about it on the show. You would say, am I wrong, that we're kind of co-parents?
We are co-parents. When we had our first kid, Casey, 12 years ago, you had this thing in your head that you wanted everything to be 50-50. You wanted to be a 50-50 parent, which I fully appreciated. But at the time, you wanted that to be 50% of everything. 50% of changing diapers, 50% of waking up at night, 50% of everything. But it didn't work out that way.
I probably took 70%.
Ha. No, what happened was, it's like we kind of found our roles. You know, maybe you were working on a book and I woke up more in the middle of the night, but, you know, when she's fussing, you did more of that, or maybe you did more bath time for sure, things like that. And then, you know, I remember before we had kids, I saw other people who had, you know, other mothers who's would talk about their husbands, like they can't do anything. You know, they can't leave their kids with them. The husband's like basically useless. And I made a point in my head to say like that was not going to happen for me because A, I really wanted a co-parent. I knew you really wanted a co-parent. And I just thought I don't want to set up a system where I have to do everything and you become this incompetent like buffoon.
Yeah, why didn't I'm not an incompetent buffoon, damn it. And the other thing is I remember early on having a conversation with your mother who if she's listening right now, you know, much respect. But I remember her saying to me early on, you know, men and women, mothers and fathers have different roles and women do certain things better and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I always thought when it comes to parenting, I hated that. Why can't I can wake up with a bottle at 3 a.m. and feed. I can nurture a child. I can raise our daughter with as much love and compassion as, you know, you can and vice versa. You know, I mean, in this house, what percentage of the things do you fix?
98%.
And who does the laundry?
You.
Exactly. You know, I don't think either of us have really subscribed to traditional, who paints her toenails?
You.
Yeah, I just feel like
it's a his toenails.
That's a good point. You get the idea.
Well, I think we have non-traditional roles in general, and I think we do have a very collaborative style, but I would say we have different strengths, and I appreciate the differences in our strengths. I don't know if you do as much, you know, or if you think of it as much, but I would say you're way more of a fun parent.
Oh, see, but now you're falling into cliche, because I do think when people say fun parent, they think, oh, the guy doesn't discipline.
You know, no, I don't think so. I think you discipline, but I just think, you know, you're more willing to tear apart the entire house to make a fort, and I'm not.
Right.
Right, but I do much more of the organizing. You do the scheduling. And
you like to schedule.
I wouldn't say I like it, but...
You're good at it. Well, I don't love dishes and laundry, but I usually...
You don't?
It's not my favorite thing. Oh, okay. It's my second favorite thing.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I think that a lot of women especially... they pigeonhole their roles.
Oh, yeah.
Without even thinking about it. It's like an unconscious process. And it's only, you know, a decade later when they realize I can't leave my kids for the weekend so I can, you know, go to a family reunion or, you know, go away with some girlfriends or something like that.
Well, I love my parents. My parents are amazing. And I know they listen to this podcast and they don't love being mentioned. But I will say my mom for years has said, your dad, he doesn't know how to cook. Your dad, blah, blah. She loves my dad. They have a great marriage, but she'll say something like that. And I say, well, did you ever ask him to cook, or did you ever early on in your marriage, did you set the expectation that Thursday nights he'd be cooking or Wednesday nights he does this or we have to split this or let him do the laundry. And if you don't, we've known a lot of people, like you said, who, well, I would never leave the kids alone with so-and-so. Well, that's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because by never doing it, you're right, it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, but it's more than that. I think you also have to be willing to let the other parent do it their way. You know, if there are things that I think I do better. My way is better. Like loading the dishwasher, stupid thing, right?
I actually agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I got it on tape. You know, just different things. But if I corrected you every single time you burped incorrectly, the baby, or you did the bottles wrong, or you dressed poorly, if I constantly nagged you and corrected you, you would decide maybe that you didn't want to do this stuff anymore. You know, you'd be like, fine, if I can't load the dishwasher, if I can't burp the baby properly, then you do it. And I think that's kind of how it happens. And then next thing you know it, the dad's, you know, hands off.
I think bottom line, we've been married 14 years. We have two kids. We get along very well. I think you just have to allow for the other person to have their things that they do differently. You just have to allow it. You cannot expect your spouse to raise your kids to view parenting the exact same way you do, or to view marriage the same way you do. And you kind of have to allow for differences.
Yeah. You do it differently, but just as good.
You do it differently, but just as good.
Thanks.
All right, I love you, Smokey Bear.
Oh, boy. So what's up this week, girl?
Well, you know, I was on the internet the other day, and there's a guy I went to high school with, a really good guy named Ed Fatakis. And he wrote this very sort of passionate blog post or Facebook entry about taking his kid to a baseball game and players not signing autographs to the kid. And he sort of wrote longingly, he actually wrote, I have in front of me, and he wrote, "Was I not mistaken? Did I really not shake Bucky Dent's hand when I was a kid? Did Greg Nettles not sign my program? I was sure they did. Of course they did." And you're saying how nowadays ballplayers don't. And he's right. I've seen this a million times. Ballplayers don't. And there are two issues working here. Number one is you have these professional collectors. Have you ever seen these guys at baseball games?
Yeah. Well, not at baseball games, but I mean, what's the Steiner or, you know, other? I know that's big business to sell their autographs.
Yeah. And so it used to be, you know, ballplayers are walking off the field. You could go up to the railing at spring training and you would ask for signatures. And now you have these guys who do it professionally. And they will actually say to a bunch of kids, I'll give you each $5 if you get this card signed. And ballplayers are completely onto it. And they're like, to hell with this. I'm not going to do it. And then number two thing is, I think there's just become a more guarded element. Maybe that's the reason, to athletes. And athletes do not sign autographs like they used to. And it sucks, because some of my greatest memories from my childhood, my grandparents taking me to spring training with the Yankees in Fort Lauderdale, standing along the railing and begging for autographs. Do you ever get an autograph from an athlete as a kid?
I don't think so. I don't think I ever had the opportunity. But I think you also missed one other point, was that part of the reason I think some athletes don't give autographs is because the more autographs that are out there, the less value there is to their particular autograph. It's not just that they know that, professional sellers are getting kids to get the autographs, which is kind of shameful, but it's also that they know that the value is going to be a lower, you know, when you were growing up, they weren't selling them all over the internet. There wasn't this access. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there really is that kind of access. So there's so much more of a market for that kind of thing. So I think people are selling that stuff more. And so I could see why an athlete would think that way, especially in something maybe like football, where you're going to have a short career, your body's probably going to be damaged to some degree, you know.
I don't think that's the number one reason, though, to be honest with you. And it's funny, you mentioned that. I don't remember who it was, but there's some athlete who I read an interview, and he said he signs absolutely everything for the very reason of lowering the value of his signature, because he knows collectors won't be after him if there are a gazillion signatures out there.
Who said that?
I don't remember who. It might have been Cal Ripken. I don't remember who it was, but it was someone who was pretty smart. And whoever it was, his signature was not worth much money, but kids still wanted it.
Right.
That's the thing. Most kids, they don't want an autograph to sell it. They want an autograph just to be like, well, look what I got.
Amazing. It's the interaction that's special. It's
exactly.
Going up to the, you know, Mean Joe Green and asking, you know, could I have your autograph?
You just dated yourself in a major way.
Well, just thinking of the commercial. But
Grandma.
You know,
yeah, no, I agree. You know what actually is cool? Selfies have kind of overtaken autographs. I actually like that. I think there's something cool about a ball player coming to the railing and a bunch of people rushing to Jock Peterson or whoever and getting a selfie with them. To me, it's authentic. It's something you can show off. You put on your screensaver. It doesn't have any monetary value.
Well, just this week, our neighbor has a daughter who's working at Jamba Juice. And you know who came in?
Would it be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
It was not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It was Magic Johnson came in. And our neighbor said that the girl asked for his autograph. And he was so nice. He said, don't you want to take my picture? Like, your friends are never going to believe that it was really me. And she posted this absolutely adorable picture of this 18-year-old girl working at Jamba Juice standing next to Magic Johnson. I mean, it's a thrill.
Yeah, I agree. You actually just sounded like my grandma, my late grandma Molly, who would say, you wouldn't believe who came into the spa today.
Thank you.
Phyllis Diller. And she signed autographs.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a shame because I think that the opportunity to interact is such a thrill and for that to be lost. And there's nothing worse than going up to your hero and be like, I'm not going to sign autographs.
There's something on your mind.
There is something on my mind. So a friend who shall remain nameless sent me an email that her child's school sent her about the sports banquets, the end of the year, mm-hmm. and they want to give out awards to the different athletes. So they're having a banquet, and it's $15 per child and $25 for adults. Okay, they have to pay for the food, and I don't know if they're renting a facility, whatever. But then they said this line, and I quote, any athlete without a valid prior engagement who is unable to attend, unfortunately, will not be eligible for an award this year. So basically, you don't know ahead of time if you're going to win an award. But they want you to schedule to come. Okay, so you want to support other people, that's fine. But if, let's say, you can't go or, gasp, you can't afford to go, then you're not eligible to win an award.
It reminds me of, do you remember you get letters back in high school? Congratulations, you're in who's who of America high school students. And, you know, blah, 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 send in your bio and make sure to send in $30 to be sure you're, and it's like, it sounds like just almost like a, in an odd way, kind of like a money-making scam on the very micro level.
It sounds 100% like a money-making scam. And imagine, you know, you want to reward, you know, the basketball team, someone who has the best attitude and, you know, the most valuable player. But the most valuable player couldn't come that night. The second most valuable player couldn't come. Meanwhile, the first several people that you would have wanted to give the award to don't come. So you give it to the sixth most valuable player in the basketball team because he's the one that could show up.
I know, but it would have been nice because for me, I probably was the sixth most valuable, so I would have been getting...
Well, I was probably the 12th, but still, I just think it becomes like a farce, you know?
I agree.
Anyway.
What can you do?
All right, so how about in the news? What do you got?
I'm kind of fascinated by something. NBA playoffs going on. Really exciting. Really, really exciting. And I was looking over the starting times for the NBA Finals, which kick off on June 2nd, which is Thursday. First game, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Second game, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Third game, 9. Fourth game, 9. Fifth game, 9. Game 6, if necessary, 9. Game 7, 8 p.m. Eastern time. And I was thinking about when I was a kid, and there would always be playoff games on weekend days. Lakers-Celtics, not all those games were night games. And this is completely ad revenue driven. It's the big money slots. And I just think about the number of kids, a massive number of kids who love LeBron James or love Kevin Love and aren't going to get to see him.
They're going to get to see him. They're just going to be sleep deprived the next day.
They're going to stay up till midnight, 1 in the morning to watch a basketball game. And I just think it is, I've always thought this about sports that do this, and all of them do now. It's a very short-sighted way of operating because this is your future fan base. These are your future customers. And they're going to miss out. They are going to miss out. I guess you could DVR it, but it's not the same.
You can't DVR. By the time you get to school the next day, everybody's talking about the outcome.
If we were living on the East Coast, and our son Emmett really digs basketball, would you let him stay up till 1 in the morning on school night to watch basketball?
Not our particular son, because he doesn't care that much. But let's say he's a rabid fan and his team is in the playoffs. Maybe.
I just think it sucks. And I also think it points out to the beauty of living on the West Coast because all these games started five.
Totally suckers. I mean, the fact that I always...
You mean kind listeners?
I always felt that way about the Oscars. I hated waiting up to like midnight. Just tell me who won the big award, you know? And now we're all done at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Also, there's one other benefit that's totally unrelated. We have New York New Year's Eve. So by 9 p.m., we're all good to go. Done.
You know what's funny? This is a good one for all you parents with young kids who want to stay up for New Year's. If you YouTube ball drop in Times Square, you can just find like last year's. And remember, we would play that for the kids when they were
like
three, four.
But we also do like, you know, Barcelona,
right?
You know, New Year's and do the countdown. And okay, everyone.
Hey, it's New Year's. Congratulations. Okay.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Go to bed.
Yes. Yeah, so did you have another story you want to talk about?
I did have one. This one really, really, really pissed me off. And I think pissed you off too. Dobson High School, Mesa, Arizona. There's a senior there named Stephen Dwyer. During his junior year in high school, he withdrew from high school because he needed a life-saving bone marrow transplant for leukemia. Took online courses, was able to return in the fall of 2015, took an extra morning class, rejoined the swim team this year, God bless this kid, was elected as a student body president. He's 2.5 credits short from graduating. He's going to finish in December. And the school, Mesa Public Schools, would not let him walk in graduation. And a spokeswoman Helen Holland. Do you know Helen?
I don't. No.
She, you know, she lauded the boy for being courageous, but she cited district policy. And here's her, you know, every year the district has a number of students who, due to their personal hardships, have not earned the minimum number of credits. These students did not participate in graduation ceremony. You and I have talked about this before because you've worked in the academic world more than I have. You've been in sort of a structured environment much more than I have. I don't know how you put up with this crap because it's so infuriating.
Well, I know that rules and policies are hard for you since you've been kind of self-employed mm-hmm. most of the time and or had a pretty flexible rule situation, policies. But I get that there's a policy because I think there are kids with various levels of hardships, and how do you make an exception for one and you don't make another? However, when you walk is completely irrelevant. You can walk across the stage. Everybody can cheer you on. You haven't graduated.
Right.
So there's no reason to have this kid not walk. And colleges all do this. You're not going to graduate for another, through the summer you have two more credits to fill. They still walk across the stage. It doesn't matter whether you walk this year, whether you walk next year. You haven't graduated till you finish your credits and you get your diploma. That's what really matters.
And I'll tell you what, instead of not letting this guy walk, to me, this kid should be given a commencement speech. And he wrote a fabulous essay on Facebook. I'll just read a tiny one paragraph he wrote. The reason I'm writing about all this is not because I want people to feel bad for me or out of spite for my high school. I write this because I believe what is happening to me, being excluded from the graduation ceremony, and other students like me is wrong. Students like me who had to suffer due to no fault of their own are lumped in the same category as those who failed classes or got suspended for doing something stupid. It makes us feel like we are being punished for something we had absolutely no control over whatsoever.
Well, and also, the fact that he's only 2.5 credits shy...
Right.
After having, you know, in only a year and a half been treated, you know, for
his cancer.
That's
like a woodworking at a gym right there.
Yeah. I mean, I think he really clearly tried hard to graduate and he fell short and it's sad. And the worst is that they let him walk. He led his class in to the field, you know, for graduation ceremonies. And he was like, all right, good luck to you people. And he had to sit in the stands.
It's pathetic. It's so pathetic.
I think it's unfortunate because really walking at graduation is not graduating. So they could have easily let, and they could amend their policy.
And also, like, here's a chance to actually teach a real lesson about compassion and dignity and decency. Like a real lesson.
Yeah, but I do think it is difficult. There are other people, I'm not talking about the dropouts. There are people whose parents kept them home because they had to care for a grandparent, and that wasn't the fault of the kid either. I mean, there are, believe me, I've heard every story and many of them are sad. They don't all have leukemia, but they're very,
kid deserved
compelling.
To walk, period. Deserved to walk. I don't care what the
rule is. I don't
disagree
with you. He could have walked.
You are a heartless woman.
I think he should have walked. Jeez.
Earl.
Yes, Earl.
What else do you have to talk about?
Okay, well, on a different note, the California Senate voted to ban smoking within 250 feet of youth sporting events. This bill was proposed by 8th grade students at an Elk Grove school in California. Makes me very proud of those kids. The bill would set the right example, says the Senator Richard Pan of Sacramento. It set the right example for young people playing sports, and I agree. And it would allow for a fine for anyone using tobacco products and e-cigarettes while children are present at practices, games, and other activities related to youth sports. So what do you think about that?
Freaking bravo. You know, I love how cigarettes and cigarette smokers have become so marginalized now. You know, I really do. And we just had this talk the other day with your sister-in-law, how even for kids now, like when you and I were growing up, one of the fears your parents had was that you would end up smoking cigarettes. And I think that's really diminished a lot. We have different fears now, and they're not any better. I'm not really worried about my kids becoming smoking because it's just become a marginalized thing in this country. And I think the more we marginalize tobacco products, just the better off we are, period.
Well, the thing is, we know they're not healthy. Secondhand smoke isn't healthy. And
what about thirdhand smoke?
I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I don't either.
But it just seems that, especially the e-cigarettes, I was really happy to hear that they included that because I think people think, oh, it's not, you know, any big deal. You know, it's not tobacco. But I think that there's plenty of carcinogens that are in e-cigarettes. But, of course, there's always somebody who opposes. And it's actually in our backyard. Republican Senator Patricia Bates of Laguna Niguel.
Nice.
Yeah. Says she opposed the legislation because it could inadvertently prohibit smoking at homes close to youth sports fields.
There's always a moron. There's always a moron. There's always someone reelect who's a moron. I don't even know how this happens. But she does not have my vote. And I just think she's a moron. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You can't smoke in your house because you live near a sports field. That's not what this law is saying.
No, she's not saying you can't smoke at your house. But let's say you live actually one of the places that we've played at. There are houses on either side of the field. Yeah. Let's say you want to sit in your front stoop and smoke a cigarette. And there happens to be a field right next to your house.
Oh, give me a break. This is dumb. I mean, you know this is dumb. Come on.
I don't know.
I hate even giving people like this. I hate even wasting my breath on people with this sort of logic and thinking. I really do.
Well, the kind of problem also happened with sex offenders that they couldn't live within a certain area of a school. And actually, there was a lot of difficulty with housing. I hate smoking more than probably anybody I know, but I do think that there's a small valid point there.
Do you want me to leave the studio to smoke right now?
No, but I think they could put an exception to the bill unless you're smoking on your own property.
I guess so, but give me who cares. Next up, we have our weekly Q&A with A.J. Hawk of the former Green Bay Packer and Cincinnati Bengal linebacker. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Well, Earl, I'd like to talk to you again about my Tower Garden by Juice Plus.
You love this thing.
I do love this thing. It's all the joy of gardening without any of the hassle. So my Tower Garden has a 20-gallon reservoir that holds all the water and a tower with space for 20 vegetables, herbs, and flowers. Right now, we are growing green beans, zucchini, peppers, tomatoes, lettuce, herbs, flowers. It's a bonanza. So I planted my garden just a few weeks ago, and here's what I can tell you.
What can you tell me?
I can tell you it grows faster than if you had planted in the ground. Whoa. Wouldn't you say already we have blossoming plants in just 2 weeks?
We do.
It uses recycled water, which for you is a very important plus.
I bet the next thing you're going to say is it's really easy to maintain.
It actually is very easy to maintain.
Are there any weeds?
There are no weeds. There's no weeding. If you live somewhere where there's weeding, believe me, you can appreciate
that. Wait, I have to ask you a serious question. How many mini acorn squashes do you have growing right now?
Already we have 4.
Whoa.
It's super exciting. If you want to learn more about the absolutely amazing Tower Garden, contact Lisa Blaisdell by checking out her Tower Garden website at lisablaisdell.towergarden.com. And don't forget to mention the Sports Parent to receive 5 free seedlings with your order of a Tower Garden.
Okay, our guest today is A.J. Hawk, and I had the pleasure of being on A.J. Hawk's really amazing podcast a few weeks ago, the Hawkcast, and he's rare in the world of sports. So A.J. is a 10-year NFL linebacker. He was drafted by the Green Bay Packers with the 5th overall pick in the 2006 NFL draft, spent 9 years in Green Bay, won a Super Bowl, spent last year with the Cincinnati Bengals. AJ, is it safe to say you're undecided about whether you'll be returning to the NFL next year?
I guess you could say that, yeah. Maybe a little bit undecided if the right situation comes up. And, yeah, I don't know. That's a good way to put it.
All right, because we'd like to offer you a free agent contract to join our podcast. We can offer you free pizza. And
in the closet studio.
In our closet studio, free pizza every week.
You have good sound, I can tell. It's always good to record a room with a bunch of clothes hanging around you.
Yeah, that's what we do.
And you can record in your pajamas.
Yeah, and we do it in our pajamas.
Perfect.
So AJ's had a very long and productive NFL career. He and his wife, Laura, who, by the way, is the sister of former NFL quarterback Brady Quinn, have 3 children, a daughter named Lennon, a son named Hendrix, a son named Vetter. In fact, before we get into this, we're going to throw something at you real quick, AJ. Who is better, Hall & Oates or Elton John?
I would have to say Hall & Oates.
Oh, man.
I love this guy. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, Elton John's awesome, but I mean, come on. That's tough for me.
All right. We can still be friends.
Nice. We're good. So, AJ, you know, we deal a lot with the intersection of sports and parenting, and it's our 3rd episode, and we wanted to have a football player on here because we're really fascinated by football itself and how professional football players feel about their kids playing football. And I know your son Hendrix plays flag football, and I wonder how you feel knowing what's going on with the NFL, with concussions, with injuries, with the physical, with the mental, how you would feel about your son going into the sport.
That's something that I really do think about more. When I first got into the NFL, I think it was a little different on how people viewed concussions and how they diagnosed them, when you came back, all that kind of stuff. And so over the last 4 or 5 years, it's definitely changed a lot. And it's actually, I never thought I would take a real close look at it because I've always been very lucky when it comes to concussions. I feel like genetically I was born with a hard head and a hard nose, and I'm able to take some shots and not get concussed. So I've been very lucky when it comes to that. But with my kids, man, I have two sons and even my daughter. I mean, kids fall down all the time. You guys know, they, especially boys, they love to – my son Hendrix, the three-year-old, loves to run his head into the wall. He bangs his head on the ground, thinks it's funny. Like, it's just what they do. So when it comes to football, though, I definitely haven't said that I wouldn't let him play. I'll definitely let him give it a shot and see how he does. But at the same time, I think I'll be very, very aware of how he's feeling, how he's doing. And I think one thing that I'm able to do and I'm very qualified for is to diagnose when someone's been concussed or dinged, as I've always called it my whole life, or looks like they may be a bit wobbly. I feel like I've always been able to watch, even on TV, and see when somebody looks like they may be struggling a bit, and I can tell which kind of hits will do it to them. So that's something I'm will constantly monitor and make sure I'm talking to him every day.
So one thing I've been thinking about is how, you know, professionals play with pads and helmets one day a week, and they practice in other ways to preserve themselves for that one day a week because they get hurt, because it's a tough sport. But kids, especially in high school, they're practicing, you know, full pads and helmets. They're practicing 5-6 days a week, you know, plus the game. So I'm wondering what you think about that, and what conditions would you want to see for your sons, you know, once they're coming up, if they do want to play, you know, middle school and high school?
Well, that's a great question. I don't think kids growing up need to practice in pads. I started playing football in the second grade, and we started wearing pads. And you're right. You don't even think about it. When you're young, you practice no matter what. You're wearing full pads, shoulder pads, helmet, pants, everything. In the NFL, you only do it once a week now. But I think they should wear pads and play and be able to hit in the games, but I just don't think it's needed in practice. I mean, even in middle school, they don't need to practice in pads, I wouldn't think. I just think we don't know as much as we think about developing brains and what head trauma can do to it. And when, if a kid is going in there, and I know the hits aren't huge when they're in third, fourth, and fifth grade, but it doesn't matter. They can still take a good shot and not feel great, and a kid's not going to sit there and be able to exactly tell you how he feels, and you don't give his brain that time to recover, and he's back on the field the next day hitting. So I don't think they need to hit in practice, to be honest.
I mean, and also, especially when you're a little boy, once the helmet's on, you think like, oh, now I can really bang heads. You know, now we can really hit hard. Whereas if they didn't have that protection on, they might be more careful.
And I think it also can teach them how to become even better tacklers and use their feet more if they practice without the helmets on. Because everyone has talked about, well, you can wear the helmets, just don't wear the full pads maybe in practice. And you can learn proper technique on how to tackle a guy. But everyone's kind of made the reference to rugby now and how those guys, they don't wear helmets and they still have huge hits. But it's true. If you don't have a helmet on, you can't run head to head into a guy. You got to find a way to get him down and come up with techniques. And I think if you do that from a young age and they learn early how to tackle without maybe using their forehead and the crown of their head, then they're going to be better off moving forward.
This might sound like a weird question, but you know, one thing I have seen through the years, and I know you have too, through youth football and the development of football players, is a certain almost militaristic approach to sports, which is don't think, just do. Listen to your coach, follow your instincts, you know, and you seem like a very intellectual person. You seem like someone who thinks outside the box. You're not just a follower. And I wonder if you think that's an off take on football, because I really do. I almost feel like I have a prejudice against the way some coaches instill this philosophy of you don't need to be a thinker. You just need to go out there, listen to me, and do what you're told. Am I off on that, or is that sort of something that is a little weird about your sport?
It's definitely a little bit weird, but I appreciate the compliment you give me, but I don't claim to be smart. I claim to be curious. I like to ask smart people like you guys questions all the time and try to learn constantly. But I think there's some good to that as a young kid growing up from a coach telling you to, you know, forget about if your ankle hurts a little bit, forget about this. We need to fight through this adversity and get things done. There's definitely some good to that. But the problem with it is there's not enough good coaches out there. There's not enough guys that truly care about the kids and want to mold them into great men, and they might just have them do things for no reason. So I wouldn't want to watch my sons going through that. And my whole life, man, growing up, I guess I was just really lucky to have great coaches, but I was that guy. I still am that guy kind of when I play football, where you're kind of trained to not ask too many questions, to go out there and just play. And I think there's some good to that, though. There has to be, but you also have to have good people leading them and teaching them the way, or they can do a lot of damage.
Let's say Vetter gets a little older and he says, you know what, Dad, I don't really like sports. I just want to play the flute. Are you totally fine with it?
Oh, yeah, man. I'll say, good. We'll go take lessons together, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got three kids with music names. I mean, I think he's going to be cool if they want to play music.
If he can play the flute, we got to get him playing the piano and playing everything. My kids honestly do sit there and sing and dance every day. My daughter, she's 5. She leads the troop and already talks about having a band when she grows up. And I said, I'll be the manager, but I don't want to be like the creepy Lindsay Lohan dad manager. I'll be a good manager.
That sounds good. So I have a question for you. I mean, when we were pregnant, it was really easy for me to come up with names. The problem was us agreeing, and Jeff wanted something like Tollbooth, you know, some ridiculous off the
Tollbooth.
Chart.
Wait, Tollbooth is a good name, don't you think?
No, he doesn't.
I love it.
Yeah, okay. So my question to you is, how did you come up with your names, and did your wife agree right away, or was it her idea? I mean, this is pretty awesome names.
It was a little bit of a back and forth, I'd say, with my daughter. So the name, it all started from the name Hendrix. I actually stole that from, obviously, Jimi Hendrix is what he's named after. But I met a kid when my wife and I were first dating. I met a little kid somewhere with his parents that came up, and it was when I was at Ohio State still. And they said, oh, this is my son Hendrix. I was like, wow, that's a cool name. And I remember looking at my wife, girlfriend at the time, saying, that's pretty cool. Hendrix Hawk would be cool. And so we had that, but my daughter was born, she was born first, and we were kind of going through, we knew we wanted to stick with the musical theme, and so we just kind of went through names, and bam, bam, and now all of a sudden, I think she might have thought of Lennon, and I was on board right away. And then Vetter was the one, our third, that was the one we had to go back and forth with, because that was our one kid, we didn't find out what the sex was until he was born. So we had to have girl and guy names, and boy names going in. And we were struggling, to tell you the truth. And I've been a big Pearl Jam fan forever and liked the name better, and we went with it. My wife was, she kind of liked the name Axel as well. But we found out that there's a couple other Axels out there. Mm-hmm. And she's like, if she's heard the name, any other kid named that, my wife automatically throws it out the door.
That's awesome.
Is there a Cobain Hawk in the future?
Yeah, we thought about it, and we were thinking about like girl names, and it seems like a lot of these kid names you come up with, like the good classic rockers, a lot of them are dead of drug overdose or suicide. Yeah. Or all kind of things. Like, man, are we setting the tone for something bad here?
Yeah.
So I don't know, that you never know, man. We went through everything. Like, we were thinking Joplin for a girl for a second, and like, yeah, that'd be weird. But we really like the name Stevie for a girl, which obviously Stevie Nick.
Yeah.
But that's been used a little bit. I really like that.
So what would hurt you more, if your kids hate sports or they hate music?
That's good.
Ooh, man, that's a tough one. I don't, man, if all three of them just absolutely hated sports, I guess it would be tough. But if they hated music at the same time, I don't even know. What a good question you just came up with. I mean, I say it all the time, and it sounds like cliche, but I don't care, man. Whatever they want to do, as long as they jump in and they're passionate about it, I'll support them. But I would say if they all hated sports, it probably would be tough. I don't plan on like taking them to games every day of my life, but it'd be tough to handle if your kids all just despised what I did for so long and things that, you know, if I want to watch golf on a Sunday, they already get mad at me actually if I turn it on. So sports would be a tough one.
Daddy, we don't want to watch your stupid football video again. We know you won the Super Bowl. Shut up. It's annoying.
But you got three kids. I mean, the odds are good with you. You're going to have one for music and one for sports. So I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
All right. So, AJ, we do a real quick speed round at the end of these. I'm going to just fire off four quick questions at you. Number one, give me your four all-time favorite bands or singers.
Dave Matthews Band, number one for sure. Pearl Jam. Ooh, boy. I mean, I love Jimi Hendrix. I love the Beatles and John Lennon. Was that four? Yeah, that's four.
Yeah, very nice. Number two, the world needs to know. What was it like playing football as a teammate of Ryan Krause?
It was great. I had a great time with him. Great guy, great player, of course. Why? That's a great question.
Thank you. Number three, what is the greatest singular song ever written, according to AJ Hawk?
Goodness. It's called Drunken Soldier by Dave Matthews, by the Dave Matthews Band. And he doesn't play it live very often. We have some of the lyrics actually painted on my son's ceiling, and along with a lot of other lyrics from different songs. But it's called Drunken Soldier. If you go read the lyrics, man, it's great. So I urge anyone to go look them up.
What's the worst concert you've ever been to?
Boy. See, I've been like over 60 Dave Matthews Band shows over my life. That was like the guy I went to starting sixth grade on. The worst show, I hate to knock anybody just because I respect any kind of musical talent, but man, I'm trying to think if I've even been to any bad concerts, because if I'm not full go into the concert, I won't go.
Right.
Well, I don't know. What about you? What's the worst concert you guys have been to?
I'm going to say, because Jeff dragged me to Hall & Oates, which I actually do like Hall & Oates, and we've been many times. But we went recently, and after 45 minutes, they took a break. They came back for another 15, and then they were done.
Yeah, that was lame.
And I thought that was just totally lame.
They're old. They're probably not doing the coke like they used to.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
exactly.
Come on.
Wait, one more question on the speed round I want to ask. You have one of the coolest names in recent football history. I mean, A.J. Hawk just sounds like a cool football player. How do you feel like your world would have been changed were your name Bob Smith?
It might have been a little different, honestly. It's something I do finally start to think about now that I'm 32 years old. I do like that, and I tell my wife that daily. I was like, think of the names, last names you could have had, of guys you could have married. Could have been horrible for her.
She could have married Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Well, my middle son, his name is Hendrix Nighthawk from the movie with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly, Step Brothers. And then my third child, Vetter's name is Vetter Saxon Hawk. So I think I've made their name better than mine for sure.
It could have been like Schwartz, you know, some kind of like
Bill,
you know,
like Bill Schwartz.
Yeah, Bill Schwartz.
You would have the Schwartz cast. That's
That's actually a good one. I like that.
That's not so bad.
Well, AJ, first of all, we really appreciate you coming on here. And I would be remiss to say again that AJ Hawk has this amazing guest loaded podcast. His website is thehawkcast.show. And you can follow AJ on Twitter at @officialAJHawk. And AJ, for being a guest on this show, you win a pair of pajamas from our closet. They will be used and they'll be sent to you shortly. So thank you so much.
And thank you. And Jeff, you were awesome on my podcast, man. I got a ton of positive feedback from your episode. And I think it's cool what you guys are doing here as well.
Oh, thanks, AJ. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. See you. Thanks.
So that was great.
AJ Hawk, what a nice guy.
I told you he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
I did. What I like about him, I just want to say real quick, is you come across a lot of athletes who are very by the book, robotic. Their thoughts have been programmed from years of sports and the indoctrination of awful coaches. And that guy's just a total free thinker. I mean, anyone who names his kids like that, I'm okay with. But I do have to say, I really do believe, and I think we could work on this, online petition, AJ Hawk, if he has a fourth kid with his wife, Hall Oates Hawk.
Hall Oates Hawk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good luck with that one.
Thank you.
All right. So now we're up to our 1 minute wrap up debate. This week, it's going to be Star Wars versus Star Trek.
we got to give props to your sister. That was Leah Guggenheimer's idea for this one. Is it my turn to go first this week?
Nope, it's my turn. Okay. And I'm going to take the Star Wars side.
Okay, I'm going to take the Star Trek side only because I'm not trying to bias the judges, but Star Wars sucks. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Ready, set, go.
So Star Wars is much more imaginative. There are so many creatures and languages. Star Trek historically has had the worst color scheme, like rust and brown. I can't watch it. You can't beat Harrison Ford in the Millennial Falcon. There's the Force. There's way better music in Star Wars, and they have lightsabers and Yoda, and they have little people that look like bears but aren't, and they're fuzzy, and everybody wants to be friends with them, and there's nothing like that on Star Trek. I've made such a good case, I don't even need my last 5 seconds. Bam!
Burt! That was horrible. That wasn't convincing.
What?
That was not convincing.
Okay, let's see what you've got.
All right, here. Ready?
Yep.
Set. Go. Basically, Star Trek was revolutionary. First of all, you had a multi-ethnic, multinational cast when that wasn't happening at all. William Shatner is a definitive all-time figure, more so than anyone you can name in Star Wars, more than Chewbacca, more than C-3PO, even more than Harrison Ford, who was better in that movie when he got knocked out and lost his head. The first Star Trek movie was terrible. Everything else was awesome. Ricardo Montalban kicked ass. The latest two Star Trek movies were far superior to the latest Star Wars movie. It's just better. And Leonard Nimoy. Bam!
I just want to have a little question for you. Do they have Star Trek Lego?
Yeah, I'm sure they do, actually.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's only because Star Wars basically would put their name on a freaking... They would put their name on a box of cigarettes if it could sell a few
more. That's
because
we love them. All right. Well, we'd like to know who you think won the debate. Tweet us at The Family Coach or at Jeff Perlman. Use the hashtag TheSportsParent so we can see your comments. Find us on Facebook at Jeff Perlman and find Catherine at The Family Coach. We'll put the links up and information about the topics we discuss in the show on our website, thesportsparentpodcast.com. Jeff's website is jeffperlman.com, and you can check out his amazing blog and take a look at the Quaz, Jeff's weekly Q&A series.
And Catherine's website, www.thefamilycoach.com.
You told me not to say the www.
That was a nod to you.
Oh, my goodness.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening. You'd like to do that too, right?
Yes, I would.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to The Sports Parent on iTunes so you don't miss an episode. And if you liked our show, please, please, please do one, please.
Please.
Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a review if you can. Also, if you have any topics you would like us to discuss in this show, send us an email to Catherine at Catherine with a C at thefamilycoach.com. Audio production assistance from Andrew Perella. Music from MC White Owl and Static Selecta. Until next week's episode of The Sports Parent, win or lose, take your kids out for ice cream after the game.